Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And before I introduce our very special guest today, we're going to see a short video.
Asking me if I know how to drive a stick? I'm tired of it. I'll drive your stupid Maserati.
$9.8 million people, 16.2 million cars in one little metropolis called Los Angeles, California. The city of angels, the place where stars are born, where the sun, the beach, and the vibe seem to flow in a continuum from Malibu to Hollywood to Beverly Hills. In LA, there are a few things guaranteed to turn heads: celebrities, beautiful women, cars. And I am at the intersection of all of that, because when these A-listers want to get together, more cars are coming than fit in the driveway. 10 cars, 1,000 cars, they call me. I'm Jillian Harris, and this is Ballet of the Dolls.
Wow. Well, that was so impressive. So many shiny cars, and oh my God. Okay, I can't wait to introduce Jillian Harris. She's going to talk. Jillian Harris, she's the CEO of Ballet of the Dolls. She's a metaphysical consultant and also an author of several books. So welcome to the studio, Jillian Harris.
Hello. So good to see ya.
Yeah, that was a very impressive video. Do you want to talk about that? Do you want to talk
Absolutely.
Okay.
Good. I mean, I want to talk about everything, but I mean, in short, Ballet of the Dolls is 21 years old. We've been in Los Angeles that amount of time. Actually, we promote doing LA, Orange County, Palm Springs. So we cover a big area. And then sometimes we're even outside of that. Somebody will call from Ventura and say, hey, do you do out here too? The Inland Empire, do you do those too? You know, and if we have a space in our schedule, we'll make it happen. But so 21 years we've been doing this. I was in radio originally, and what happened? I was in radio.
Wait, yeah. What did you do in radio? I just have to ask.
For 13 years, I was a newscaster, a reporter, I did it in radio, though. So I did my, you know, broadcast journalism in radio rather than television, and I did some field reporting and stuff like that. And it was pretty exciting times back then in the 80s and 90s and whatnot. But after 13 years, I actually quit. I didn't want to do that anymore. I always wanted to be a DJ. And the only reason I got into news is because that was the first job I was offered. And then I was typecast. And they're like, you're so good at that. This is what you are. And I'm like, I'm an imposter.
Yeah, what were the kinds of things that you were reporting on?
Oh, well, I would just do, okay, so it's a music station. It would always be a music station. I didn't do like the all news stations, which are cool.
Or the weather. You weren't out of weather.
Well, yeah, I did do weather. I did a lot of weather, sports. Absolutely. The headlines, then some weather and some sports. Yeah, I did that. I knew all the teams. The teams have changed now. If I name them now, I'll date myself. But anyway, like the Ducks, they did not exist at the time. So there are definitely names of teams that have changed. But anyway, I got upset with something that happened politically. And I also noticed that in order to do a good newscast, you needed to start with as much blood and fearful stories as possible. And so, you know, sorry if anyone's having breakfast, but I mean, oh my gosh, if I have to do a story about this torso found in a trash bin in Torrance one more time, you know, and I did. I had to do it every time. You have to write it fresh, rehearse it, and then broadcast it. and then write it in a new way for the next, you know, and I was every 30 minutes. So every 30 minutes for 5 hours, how much of that? And I understand energy. And this was just not healthy. It wasn't healthy for me. And it was definitely not healthy for the people that I'm supposed to scare now with this information. Oh. You know, and you only put your nice positive things at the end as your fluffy at the end. So that's the way.
And did they actually say you need to scare them? Or was that just what you knew?
No, it's just obvious. That's their lead story. And if you don't do that lead story, what are you doing? Why are you not leading with the lead story? This would be the lead story. The scariest, craziest thing that's happening. Then no, the five people who were shot at the bus stop. That's the big story, not, you know, some big, wonderful thing that's happening, you know, it's the community thing. No, that's not it. So, yeah, that's the way it was. And then something happened bigger where, like, our country and, you know, it's a world thing. But so we bombed somewhere, I don't know, Libya. This is a long time ago. And then the White House acknowledged to us, I want to say to me, but to the world, that they had misled reporters and journalists so that we would report a certain thing so as to not let the bad guys or, you know, the guys that they were, you know, working against know what they were really up to. And so it led them astray and it got them off guard and innocent people got hurt. And I'm like, I was part of that. I hated that. That didn't feel good. So I allowed myself to, a chain of events happened and I got out of radio for a minute. I wanted a break. And sorry, I'm going to turn my fan on because I'm in Southern California and it's no joke hot. So I allowed myself to kind of take a break from radio. And then the Rodney King riot started. And what was interesting about that, I was in my break. I wanted to take a year off. But I had only been off for like, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. And now this happened. And I found myself, because of what was in me, I'd been doing news for 13 years. So I'm sitting there and I'm watching the news. Like, I couldn't go to sleep. I had a big map. I had a red felt tip marker and I had a black one. And whenever there was a fire, I put a red dot. And there were all these red dots all over. And I was like just chronicling what was happening. And I was realizing I was addicted to it. And then I guess that energy went out and one of my old program directors called me from a different station where he was now, KACE, and said, hey, we need extra news coverage. Can you help us? And I'm like, I'm there. Where are you guys? I'm, you know, right there. And they were located. They shared a building with the local police department there. So I pull into the alley. It was in Inglewood, KACE, 103.9 and 98.3. They simulcast on two frequencies. But anyway, I pull into the alley and there's like the military with machine guns, tanks, and all this stuff. And I'm like, I mean, I just drove in from Newport Beach and I'm like, whoa.
Wow.
MG. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So it was exciting, though. I felt protected. That's for sure. I felt safe. Yeah. But anyway, did that. And then when that coverage ended, I said, hey, you know, I'm not doing news anymore. I mean, you know, glad to help and stuff, but I'm a DJ. Can you like let me have a chance? And so they put me on at like 2 a.m. to 5 or something. What was it? It was a late, ridiculous shift. And I did that for about 6 or 7 months till a new program director came in and realized that I was in the middle of the night. And he's like, why do you have this woman on in the middle of the night? And so he kind of discovered me, Kevin Fleming, God bless him. In fact, I wrote about him in my new book, not to move around too much, but he basically rescued me. And so next thing I knew, I was morning drive. And then we got bought by the station that, or the company that owned KFI and Coast. If anybody knows Los Angeles radio, these are huge. And so we were sister stations with them. And so, yeah, next thing I know, I'm asked, what shift would you like? And I had done mornings for so long. I'm like, I want afternoon drive. So I did afternoon drive. And then there was a thing that happened in radio. where there was a deregulation. You could own a lot of stations up to a limit. And there was a conglomerate that came along and wanted to buy pretty much every station in Los Angeles, it seemed like. But they bought their limit worth. And so they bought our sister stations. And then they had a they were part of another company that was then able to come in and buy KACE as well. And they changed to Spanish. I don't speak Spanish, unfortunately. I was stupid. I learned French. And I live in Southern California. Why did I take French? And I don't know any French now. It was like so silly. But anyway, so I was out of a job for a minute. So while I was looking for work, and I was all over the country too doing that. There were places in Atlanta and all over wanted to hire me. But I didn't want to go. I had a horse. I lived in Malibu Canyon. Life was good. But so there was a job. There was a local newspaper in Malibu. I looked at it and I said, I better, keep going back and forth to the Caribbean. I'm having fun, but I need to really work while I look for work. And there was a job at a female valet company. And I was like, oh my God, that is so cool. I've never heard of that. And I've always loved the drive. It's in my genes. I mean, backwards, forwards with precision. And I didn't know that I would soon become a certified precision driving instructor even. But so I applied.
Did you take a course? Or you just were good?
I worked with local CHP guys who were in charge of EVOC, which is the emergency vehicle operating oh my gosh, I forget what the C means. Course. There it is. Emergency vehicle operating course. And this is all fire, ambulance, police, sheriff, all of the emergency vehicle operators have to take this course, and it is facilitated by the CHP. And so I worked with two of the people who facilitate that, and they helped me create a course through Valet of the Dolls. And, I hate to say it, let me just out them right now. There is no governing body to say whether you, there's nobody to go to. You can open a school to teach precision driving, and there's no, license thing that you need or anything. So all I can say for credibility
the drivers need the license.
Yes.
The certificate, but the people teaching the course don't.
So I'll put it like this. You have to have a driver's license in order to take the course. Yes. Just a regular driver's license. Right. Then to learn whatever this particular course offers. I was certified because I was able to do this entire course flawlessly over and over and over again. And then anybody who came through the course, if they're able to do it flawlessly, they're certified too. So I'm the instructor, and this particular course focused on reverse. I haven't taught it since the pandemic lockdown, but it focuses on reverse motion with quarter inch precision. We give students tools so they can attain quarter inch precision while in reverse. Because as a valet, you are backing in Lamborghinis, Maseratis, all kinds, even a Honda. It's somebody's little hoopty. They love that vehicle, okay? They named it something. So you need to take care of it while you're backing it in. And, we do private event valet. So that means we could be called to somebody's ranch to park the cars in that corral over there. You got to make sure to park. You got a tree you got to deal with, and there's a bench, and you got to, make sure to squeeze it right in there just right with no error. And so if you've only got a couple of inches, when you turn your wheel, you really want to know which way the car is going to go. There's a question that I love to ask valets. We have a lot of I'm missing this part of the story, but I'm just going to do this and then I'll go back and catch up. Okay. One of the questions that I ask them in quiz form is, if you're backing up and the left side of your car, for instance, is near the curb or cliff, let's do cliff. Let's not do curb. It's near the cliff. And it's getting closer and closer to the cliff. As you back up, your left side is getting closer and closer, like with inches of the cliff within inches. Which way do you turn the wheel to stop that from happening? Can you tell me, Hillary?
No, I'm off. I'm probably off the cliff because I have no sense of direction. So,
and then also you only have that much time. So left or right?
Right.
Right? Right? Thank you. Good. You saved your life. That's awesome. Phew. That was a guess. She's got a lung. I know.
That was a guess. That was a guess.
Yeah. So, yeah, you want to know what's going to happen when you turn it to the left, when you turn it to the right. God. And some people think it's a trick question. You know, well, we're going backwards, and I want it to go to the right, so I must turn it to the left. And so you're dead. You just went off the cliff. So, yes. And, you know, we've had those kind of moments. Not off the cliff, but I've had a long time ago, a Mercedes-Benz coming down a driveway, left tire off the edge. So we had to have that towed off, you know, and it was in perfect condition when it was a little dusty, but it was good. Angels were with us big time.
What
on
do you
that
mean line. Off the edge?
So it was a cliffside driveway that was a big incline, and you come down and you make a curve and then you end up eventually at the street. So she's backing the car down. As she goes to make that curve to the right, she doesn't turn enough. She doesn't know what to look at. A lot of people, when they're backing up, they're looking, they're trying to turn their head and literally think that they can look out the passenger side window like a giraffe or something and be able to see what they need to see. They can't. They need to look at their side view mirrors. You basically keep your head forward and left, right with your side view mirrors to see the side of the car, aim them down, see the road, see where your wheels are. You know, and be able to really, and that rear assist thing, you need to know how to do your left, right, side view mirrors, which way to turn the wheel to get the effect you want. And then the rear assist in all these vehicles now can then be icing on the cake. But to only depend on that is not going to help you. You're still going to like wiggle around like a worm when you're coming backwards if you don't understand which way to turn your wheel.
So do you think that some people, oh my God, my watch keeps talking, right? I'm taking it off. I keep hitting something. Bad Siri. Okay. Do you think that some people have the aptitude for driving and others don't, or do you think you can learn it?
Oh, you can absolutely learn it. Oh, you can so learn it. And so that's why I did the course. And I do it in a different way now. But I originally, all the way up until the lockdown, pandemic lockdown, once or twice a week, I would meet four or five students. And everybody would get 30 to minutes to an hour, depending on how the schedule would work that night, of doing the course. And I would give them 13, there are 13 maneuvers. I would say, do this. So they do the first maneuver. They say they got to go forward and back in with a right turn to a parking space. And when they do that, they're either going to do it perfectly or they're going to be over the line. They're going to be crooked. They're going to be scared. They're going to be whatever. And so I get to see what their weaknesses are, if there are any. And if there are any, then I get to train that out of them. There's a tool for everything. So then I put them through all 13 maneuvers and we figure out where the good is and where the bad is, if there is any. And I write out a report and I send that report to them via email after the course. And so now they have something in writing to go from as they take their car and go practice these things that we worked on. And now you got a score. So, and you want your score to be 56 is what we call the average. And I really need to refamiliarize myself with the numbers, but anybody in the 60s, they were the top drivers. And if you're in the 40s, you're a problem. I want to put you on keyboard and not let you drive anything. But it's good to know that. And then it's good to know that, you know what, Lucy is great at, you know, which way left, right, when she's backing on a straight line, she could follow a cliff perfectly and not fall over. But when she goes to back into a tight squeeze or with that right turn, there's a problem that she needs to work on. So they get their score. They may not like the number. Of course, they want to compete. The higher your score is, the more likely you are to get more work. So this was another thing that was happening. And now I'm still doing the same kind of thing, but not as organized in such an organized fashion as I was at that time. And we'll explain why in a bit.
So you as the CEO.
Yes.
That you were doing this. I mean,
yes, I'm operations manager. I mean, but you know, yeah.
I mean, obviously it was quality control, which was your business.
And no other valet company in the city of Los Angeles, and there are more than 100 valet companies, had a class like this. none. And this class is so, and PVOC, P-V-O-C, the Precision Vehicle Operating Course, for which there was a website, but I took it down. I'm thinking of possibly, I don't know, putting it back. If I do, I would be offering it to other valet companies who have occasionally asked me, please, can you, you know, train this person? And I let someone know about it. They're like, we don't need that. And then as soon as somebody hurts a car, they're like, hey, Jillian, can you work with this person for me and, you know, see if we can, you know, because I really
would
like
they pay you?
Yes.
Would they pay you? Oh.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. I'm saving you thousands. You better pay me. Yeah.
Right. But do you... did you enjoy that?
I did, but I just had too much to do. I discovered how to do a 26-hour day with Valet of the Dolls. It's not a simple company. And 6 hours. Yeah, I know. And I wish I wasn't kidding about that. But when you're awake and you realize, oh my God, I woke up at 7 yesterday and it's 8 a.m. today and I haven't slept, you know. So, yeah. Yeah, I've figured out some things that made it so that there were templates and ways of doing things that made it easier. And also, it took about 5 years for me to be able to figure out how to train other people to help me in the office. So once I was able to do that, then I could more systematically do things. But I still wasn't really healthy in terms of time off. When you own it and the way that the calls come in and stuff, I just felt like I wanted to win all the time. I was always in competition all the time. So if a quote came in, I want to be the company that gets you your estimate within 20 minutes. And the only reason I'm not going to get it to you within 20 minutes is because I have a line of them, but everybody's getting their quote within the hour or two. And I'm really fast. So, and then I would hire people who could be fast with me and we could spit out like 15 to 20 quotes in a day, every day. And that's how busy it is and can be at Valet of the Dolls. So.
All right. So hold on.
Yeah.
You left the I'm going back in time.
I know. I went crazy.
No. I like it. It's good. So you left the radio. You were going around. And somehow you got a job at the female valet service.
Yes. And she wanted to sell her company because she'd been doing it for 19 years. And I said, hey, show me how to do this. Let me run your company for you, because she was going to meet with some people who were going to buy it. And the deal fell through. I said, if it falls through, let me run your company for you. I'm only going to charge you $10 per hour, which is ridiculous. $10 per hour. But if I like it, I will buy it from you. You know, if I'm good at it, absolutely, it's on. And my money was running really short. I had been living off my savings and everything. So I totally wiped out my 401k like that, you know? So anyway, I...
So how long did you do... 19 months. How long did you do 10 hour a day for 19 months?
$10
a day, sorry.
$10 an hour.
An hour, right. How long did you do that for?
19 months. And I doubled the size of her business volume. I tripled the size of her staff, because that's what you needed in order to be able to double the business volume. And she had never, ever seen profit like that before. And so I was doing the valet's theme dressing and stuff like that. The party planners just absolutely loved me.
$10 an hour?
Mm-hmm.
Or did you get part of the profits?
No, I did not.
Okay.
Yes. And the previous person she had was like a 15 or 16 an hour, you know, and this was back in 2000. So it's a bit ago, you know, but anyway, so we didn't get along very well. She fired me. And she also was turning down all of the offers that I made her. I had investors and everything, and my investors were like going away because it was taking her too long. And she was the sweat equity that I put into her. She was not, had no respect for that. That was like not even part of it. She wanted 60,000 cash, period. End of subject. I'm like, okay. So finally, I knew I didn't want her company. I knew the name Valet of the Dolls. Her company was called Valet Girls. And I knew what I wanted to do. I knew my name was going to be stronger. I knew what we were going to do. And almost everybody who worked for her was like, Jillian, hurry up. Let's go. I don't want to be here anymore. I want to be with you. I'm like, okay. So I already knew we were going to be incredible. So when my dad saw what I could do, he said, you know what? You don't need other people's money. I see what you can do. He saw me raise this money over and over again. It's like, you know, I'd lose investors and I'd get more. I mean, and I just always had enough money to buy her thing. But anyway, she turned down all of my offers. Even the last one, which was for everything that she wanted. I insisted, though, on an escrow. And she didn't want to do an escrow, which I think is suspicious. So it fell through, and I was really grateful. I was really happy. I popped a bottle of champagne when that happened because I'm like, awesome. 5 p.m., she has turned it down again. I do not have to, you know, I can go forward with Valet of the Dolls. I wasn't under contract with her to not compete or anything like that. So I competed. And the one thing that I like to be clear about in starting this, I had personally worked about 200 locations. And so I knew all these addresses, but I didn't feel that it was right of me to send a promotional card or whatever to those addresses. I preferred to simply look at a map and take down the addresses of every single house around those addresses and promote to them. So a couple hundred addresses turned into thousands of addresses. And I sent an army of valets out to collect these addresses. And basically from that postcard campaign, we started with 12 parties immediately. And the first of the 12 was Roland Emmerich, who was a movie director. He did the 4th of July, Independence Day. That it wasn't the 4th of July, Independence Day. Day After Tomorrow, Fallen, I think is one of his movies. Those scary movies. He does these dramatic, scary movies. But you know, people who went to his party then want to hire you. So in the first year we did 100 parties. Whereas the person who I was working for, her company, she was bragging that in her first year, they did 19 parties. 19. So we did 100 the first year, 200 the next year, 300 the next year, all the way until we got to 2008. We were at about 500 parties, but now, you know, we're in the second, Great Depression, you know, that horrible economic time that the country and kind of world went through. And so what was interesting, though, about that, that's when we got to figure out that for this branch in Los Angeles, we are so in alignment with the entertainment industry. So the entertainment industry lost about 28% in revenues that year. And so did we. 28%. I'm like, oh, isn't that interesting? Misery loves company. I was like, oh, that's cool. I like that. But at the same time, we still had 500 clients. Year after year, it just held steady at 500 clients until we started climbing up to 600. And then I'll tell you what I did about that because I didn't want to work that much. But 500 clients.
Did that 500 clients all have parties? Like how often did they have?
Yeah, I guess I'm saying it wrong too, because it might not be 500 clients, but 500 parking events per year. So some of those were by repeaters. Yeah. We have some clients who like give four or five parties in a year or events and fundraisers and grand openings and things. And so, but to get to 500, so we lost 28% in terms of money, but the number of parties are still there. So what was happening is they were still having their events, but they were doing smaller events. So to save money, it went smaller, but they still needed us, which was a great sign of our strength. So when the economy started to pick up again, we start to skyrocket again. But now I'm at a point where I'm like, okay, but wait, this is like not healthy for me. You know, I'm doing the kind of volume that other companies are doing, and they have like a team of five in the office. And for me, at most, it was me and two other people. So, and then the more people you have work in the office, then the more parties you have to take on in order to be able to pay them, you know? And so there was that. Right. And then I also didn't realize at that time, how much I could charge. At certain points, I was at the top with the big boys, you know, and I also want to say at that time when we started, there were two other female valet parking services. So the valets started in the 70s or something, like the late 70s. Dana Hartley was an employee at the valets, and she hated it because they didn't allow you to take tips and they wouldn't allow the customers to tip, which is like, yeah, like what? Really? And so that means that if a customer wanted to put extra tip money in their check to be given to the valets, the company was going to keep it because they told you, you know, thank you though. So yeah, that would happen. So Dana was like, you know what? Forget this. I'm going to go start my own company. So she started Valet Girls. And so what's interesting is here I go.
Oh, that was her. Okay.
Yeah. And then I worked for her. But my intention was to buy it. So what's interesting is, you know, I lived in Malibu Canyon, and my first day working for Valet Girls was in the Colony, the famous Colony in Malibu. And I cried the whole 12 minutes from my house to the Colony. Like, oh my God, here I just get out of radio. I mean, I had a bodyguard. I had my own driver. I was going, you know, public appearances because I was finally an air personality instead of a newscaster. Yeah. It was just like, you know, all that. And now I'm going to go park cars. So emotionally, psychologically, I had something that I needed to deal with and grow through. And I'm so glad that I did, because I actually was mistakenly identifying myself with what I did for a living. And that's not healthy or real or true, you know? And so I know a lot of people do that. They think they're all that. And then all of a sudden they lose that job and they feel like they're nothing. Well, oh my gosh, something's wrong with that picture. So I needed to get that I am this incredible spirit being, regardless of what it is that I'm actually doing. So, so that was beautiful to know. And that helped me. But anyway, yeah, I cried all the way to the job. Oh, I was wearing white shorts. This woman did not know how to dress her valets, okay? It was like until I started to run the company, and then we got really cool. But white shorts, a white button-up shirt, and a light bubblegum pink bow tie kind of reminded me of the milkmen in the 50s. I'm like, oh my gosh. But anyway, so I go into the Colony. The first car that I drive is an Aston Martin. It's brand spanking new. It has no plates. I just happened to know that that was a $200,000 car. My tears were gone. I was like crying. What? No, this is, oh my goodness. And all of the cars that were coming, I'm like, wow. And now I'm suddenly enamored with this product, this business, this service.
Yeah.
And so that's why I knew that she was taking meetings to sell it. She was tired. I can see how, and I understand why she got tired, 19 years. But so that's why I made the offer. So then I worked for her. Then she fired me. And pretty much instantly, I started Valet of the Dolls. My dad said, listen, you don't need investors. I'm going to give you the money that you need. And my grandmother, who liked to mimic my dad, said, I'm going to give you money too. And so I'm cool. Awesome.
Wow. All right. We're going to hold that thought. That's okay. Amazing. And then we're going to come back after a word from our sponsor and continue the rest of the story. All right. We'll see you in a minute.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. K-I-K-O-R-I.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
Thank you, as always, to our sponsor, KikoriApp.com. If you want to bring experiential, social-emotional learning to your children at schools, to your teams, to your businesses, go to KikoriApp.com and schedule a time to talk to them. And if you would like some summer reading, I know Jillian has written her own books. I'm going to show you mine, as always, my memoir, The Second Piece of French Toast. If you want some juicy reading, yes, it was courageous, and you're not allowed to judge me. Always have to add that. And then if you find yourself on a different side of life and you want to have more fun, you're tired of being on the dark side, get this. It's called Your Bullshit is Your Blessing. It's techniques for moving from what I call the left side of life back to the right, where things are way more fun, more possibility. And you can get all these on Amazon. Just Google or search Hillary Burns or Hillary Arno Burns. That's my maiden name, A-R-N-O-W. And then, as the commercial was talking about, this is real talk. I found myself, after I wrote my first book, someone said, why didn't you speak up? And I was like, I didn't even know I wasn't. So I learned painfully how to speak up, and it changed my life. That's what this book is about, real talk. If you find yourself a people-pleasing, pleasant phony like I was, call me. Or go to Hillary at gettingrealwithhillary.com and let's have a conversation and let's get you free. It's a lot more fun. And now we're going to bring back Jillian Harris. Sorry, oh my God, what's wrong with my tongue today? Jillian Harris. My words are not coming out. I think it's the COVID. So anyway, so all right. So tell me again, you said you were fired, but you also said, we're just going to continue right back.
Okay.
You said you were fired, but you also said you gave her, you tried to buy it. When? Yeah. What was the timing of that? I don't know why it's stuck in
the timing. About 4 months, 4 or 5 months, maybe.
So when
six.
Did she fire you? Like,
she fired me in December of 2002.
Okay, and then you kept trying to buy it, or after that,
no,
you
just I wanted to make her one more offer because I kept trying to negotiate with her. I couldn't believe that she wouldn't bring the price down a little bit and whatnot. So finally, I said, okay, let me just offer her everything that she's asking.
Yeah.
Even it was 60,000 cash. She wanted cash. And for her company, that it wasn't worth that. So cash but I need the escrow.
What's the escrow that puts it in?
In a safe place for a minute while we're doing due diligence to make sure that there are no bills, there's no taxes due, there's no lawsuits against the company, there's no none of that stuff going on that you'd be accidentally getting into. Yeah, you want to know that. So for some reason, she did not want to do that.
So you were like, so she,
peace out.
And what happened to that company?
That's interesting. So she competed with me for a couple of years. And I want you to know, I went large instantly. I said, I don't want to compete with the other two female valet companies. Yeah. They're like small-minded. They're, mm-hmm. Cute, pink, whatever.
Bow ties.
Pink, cute is for puppies. I wanted to compete with, I wanted to be a thorn in the side of the great big boy companies in Los Angeles. I wanted to be a true contender. I wanted to be, I wanted to show them that we could not only drive circles around them backwards, but, be a force that they needed to deal with. And that's exactly what happened. So,
when did you get the black, the uniforms? When did you get those?
Immediately. Immediately. Yeah, I mean, so
you had to buy all of them, right? You had to buy all that stuff.
No, well, certain parts. So, we started, I was like, okay, I'm not going to put them in white shorts and white shirt and the big bubble gum pink bow tie. unless the client wants the bubblegum pink bow tie. But we were pretty much black and white, like the guys were. Black pants, white button-down shirt with a collar, black bow tie, black vest. And the vest says Valet of the Dolls on it. And I saw that from the guys.
The vest what? Oh, has Valet of the
Dolls. Says Valet of the Dolls on it. Yeah, like I saw that from the guys. I'm like, okay, well we're going to do the same thing. And then, though, we did another thing where originally we don't right now because of what I'll explain, but we did a lot of theme dressing. And it's still available, you know, but I don't promote it as much so that it won't happen to me as much. It's a to me thing. It's like, oh my God, I gotta find five fire people outfits or whatever, you know, pirates or whatever it is. And Alice in Wonderland, you know, a lot of kids parties love themes. And so we would do that for them. And we still have a lot of stuff, but I just moved sidebar from Los Angeles to Riverside, where my mom is, because my dad passed away. But in doing that, I had to clear out 20 years worth of costumes and whatnot. And I didn't know what to do with all this stuff. I mean, there was stuff in there that we hadn't done for years. I'm like, I guess I could sell it, but I don't even have time. And I just like tossed it. And I felt really bad about that, you know, but it was tons and tons and tons. Like, you know, we just did so much stuff. But so I kept some things, like Tropical comes up. So we're ready with the Lays and the Hawaiian shirts and the hula skirts if they want, you know, we're ready with all of that. But
I don't know why I'm asking, but do you charge extra for the extra costumes?
Yes,
I
hope. Absolutely. Yeah. For sure, for sure.
Especially if it's a new one and you got to find it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then even if they want a different color bow tie, there's a fee for that, you know,
okay.
Make that happen to get it to the team and all that. So let me see, where was I? We started, I guess I'll back up and just, because I don't remember exactly where I was, but maybe it'll come back. But I know that we started.
You were a true contender. Force, new outfits. That's where we were before the break.
Yeah. When we were seen by Los Angeles Magazine, we were wearing shorts and a tank top and sun hats. Oh my God. We were just so adorable. We started 333, March 3rd, 2003. I saw that date coming and I'm like, oh my gosh. That's our start date. So I technically opened the doors on that date, meaning I was taking phone calls, I'm taking quotes, and luckily nobody needed us right away. There was a thing that I won't do right now, but I'm straight up God shot angel in terms of how we got our first insurance policy. Absolutely amazing, because that's the expensive part. That's really the challenge for a new owner. Is, you know, to be able to afford that part. You gotta know that that part is gonna happen. And you have to have that thing, or it's the blood of your company, or you can't, not with a sound, peaceful mind, operate without an insurance policy. It's against the law, and oh my God, if something were to happen, you know? So, so we started 333. And by May, that's 2 months, we were doing an event that was 200 cars per day, 2 days up in the Mount Olympus area of Los Angeles. And it was attended by a lot of media, including Los Angeles Magazine. Here I've got 20 seasoned, fun valets, you know, we're just awesome. And we're proud and we're happy and we're like excited about what we're doing. We love what we're doing. I mean, valet, if you're that kind of person, it's not for everybody. But if you are that kind of person, it's addictive and it's adrenaline and it's fun. And it's social, you know, the people. And then people just loved us. They're like, what? Females? 20 of them. Oh my gosh. So
where did you get them? Were they from your old company?
They came with me. Yes. Originally they came with me. And then that just starts the whole thing. Now it's got word of mouth and that you don't have a problem again. So, Los Angeles.
And how did you get that? I know I keep interrupting, but how did you get the 2 day gig?
Oh, well, because everybody knew me. Oh, so part of that campaign when I did the postcards, I made sure to let every party planner know that I'd started my company. I said, you know, I'm not trying to take you away from the original, but I want to give you an option that we're here to. Yeah.
So smart. Wow.
Yes, yeah, I was. I went for it. I went hard.
You did.
And,
woo.
Yeah. So Los Angeles Magazine names us Best of LA. Do you know how hard it is to be named Best of LA? people work for decades to be named best of LA of whatever it is that they do. So best ballet of LA, what does that unleash? Every single television station, every newscast, every magazine, newspapers around the globe in markets that I didn't even need were like wanting to do a story on Valet of the Dolls. We were constantly, we even came up with a code. It's a C5 plus. If Valet saw that on their party info email, they knew that there was going to be media there focused on us. So put your makeup on, be pretty. Don't be shy on that particular day. So, so you know, it's been like that, that kind of energy. And then it's a sisterhood. And so it has become this huge, big thing that's bigger than me, so much bigger than me. And it became more than I thought ever, that I even imagined that it could be, you know, like family, like people becoming friends for life because of the time that they spent together working in the trenches of Valet of the Dolls. You know, so there's good times and bad times. And I also want to brag and say we've worked for, sometimes I have not been so proud of this, but every single White House since 2003 has used Valet of the Dolls. We're that company. Our work is that kind of good. We're
in,
that kind of
in Washington, D.C.? Would you go there?
They come here. When they come here.
Oh, when they come to L.A. Okay, okay.
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah, exactly. When they come to Los Angeles to mess up our traffic for a day, yes, we're the valet company that's taking them. So Secret Service loves us. I love, like, I do a parking plan, and then they call me, and they're like, you know, they want to go over the parking plan, and they invariably will change it. And I've learned to kind of, like, be ready for that. And I'm like, let me see if I can guess where. And a couple of times I've gotten it just right. I'm like, I'm thinking that you want us to not do it here. You want us to do it there. They're like, exactly. Or they're loving us because of how quickly we're able to clear an area so that the guest of honor, you know, whatever president or whatever that is, can arrive in a clear space. Just all of that. It's exciting. It's awesome. And we're still doing that kind of thing today.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. So we have about, let's see, 9 minutes to wrap up. I want to make sure you tell people what's going on.
Yes.
So that you have enough time to go over
Thank you, because
what you're looking for. Yeah. Because I know this is so exciting. I want to hear more, but I want to make sure we hit what we came here for. So go ahead.
I have started, all the time that I've been doing Valet of the Dolls, it has allowed me to actually work on my true life purpose, which is a metaphysician, spiritual arena, my world orbit spirituality. And I really want that on a 24-hour basis, you know, like 24/7 instead of fragmented as it is right now. So something happened last year. My dad passed away, unfortunately, and he caught my COVID, it killed him in 3 days. Anyway, after that happened, I also noticed him around a lot. And then talking to my mom, she's noticing him around a lot. And we're sharing these stories. And I'm like, okay, I need to write this. And I've been a medium forever. I mean, this book right here that you see behind me, Have We Met? How to Identify Your Reincarnated Loved Ones. That is a great book about a medium gone completely wild. Like, cause I was like a sloppy medium. I love calling myself that, a sloppy medium, but I have become a lot more organized at it now and being able to control it and whatnot. And so what I decided after I'm writing out all of these things of my dad showing me just how not dead he is, as I decided I wanted to share with people, you know, when I would share with folks out in the world, they'd look at me like, you know, they love that what they're hearing, but they so wish that they could do the same. And so I wanted to teach people how it is that I do what I do. And so that, of course, has made me look at the gift of mediumship and all of the rest of the clairs, the clairsentience, clairaudience, clair all of that, in a totally different way, and realizing that we all are natural at that, but we just need to operate differently. We're not taught that as a regular thing, like in school and whatnot, how to function as a spirit being, you know, it's all how to function in the physical, you know, and whatnot. So I've started a school, and it is a metaphysical academy, and it's called Stargate Adventure. I'm very excited. The website is almost done. Give it another week or so, stargateadventure.com. But I'm teaching three things: mediumship, Reiki. I'm a Reiki master teacher too. And intention, which I've been teaching intention for, you know, conscious creation for about 12 years. I loved Valet of the Dolls for allowing me to go to school. I got my master's degree in spiritual psychology and I didn't need a loan. So the company has done things like that for me.
Which school did you go to?
USM, the University of Santa Monica.
I was looking at that school.
Yeah. Wow. Oh my God. Loved it. Loved it. OMG, changed my life completely. Loved it. Yeah. So, so I'm making this commitment to move on. And now I need to, you know, release myself from Valet of the Dolls, but I need to put it in the right hands. And so there was a company that was going to buy it. They'd been talking about it for years. When are you going to be done, Jillian? When are you going to be done? So I call them. I'm like, yo, I think I'm finished now. But what I learn is what they're anxious for, because when I reach a certain level, I don't allow myself to be too busy anymore. Used to. 19 parties in a day was nothing for me. Sending out 100 and something valets in a day was nothing for me, but it would stress me out. So I guess it was something. So I swore that off. And so I have now put a limit on it. And when I have too many parties, I give them away to a few select companies. So this was one company that they get a lot of my parties and they actually even give me a kickback, which I appreciate. But anyway, so they know how busy I am. The truth came out that he says, I don't want a female valet company, but I'll take your phone number. I'll take your website. Please do not just close. Please let me, you know, they want to buy it. They want to buy it for a substantial amount of money and then be done with female valet. And I, you know, I could go on, but I just see the time. He gave me reasons that were not cool. And the thing is, the percentage of women who are in the valet business, it's like, I don't know, 11, 12% or something compared to, you know, men. If a woman right now wants to, like, let me put it like this. If a man wants to get a job at a valet company at one of the more than 100 valet companies in Los Angeles, and he's got no experience whatsoever, he can pick from the few places that will offer him work because they're always looking for more people. If a woman in the same situation or even with experience as a valet goes to these same companies to apply for work, she's going to be turned down if they already have their 2 or 3 female quota met.
Whoa.
Yeah, 2 or 3 right. out of so, their. Yeah.
So are you looking for someone who wants to retain it as a female valet company? Are you looking for
please.
A woman? Tell us what you're looking for so we can.
Well, I am looking for someone. And I realize too that it is possible for a man to do this. However, what an amazing thing would it be for a woman to do it? And I know it has been very powerful for us to have a female answer the phone, a female voice. If it's not mine, it's another female answering the phone and answering questions. The other company that just closed, or is in the process of closing, that's the one that I worked for prior, and you asked me what happened. She competed with me for a few years. Then she got cancer, unfortunately. And in order to fight that, she knew she needed to not be stressed out. So she sold the company so that she could heal. And then the new company, it was a couple, and the man ended up in court. And they, the court, told him he could not have anything to do with this company anymore or another valet company because of the exploitation that he was doing. I mean, he had a website up with girls in bikinis, and there was not even a car key in the picture. I'm like, what are you actually selling?
It was.
So this is part of what I'm looking to avoid. I don't want that to happen. You know, girl power, you know, is really like most of the people who hire us are female anyway. They're the party planners, it's the head lady of the house. It's, you know, women throw more parties, I guess, than men. So I'm looking for that. If it could be a female, that'd be amazing. Otherwise, you know, I have a little bit of an open mind otherwise, because I'm just looking for somebody who would take care, who gets it. This is a franchisable company. I did a little bit of that. We had a branch in Colorado. We had one that was starting in Houston. And so it's just, you know, but I realized that was a lot of work for me too. And I was like, okay, wait. And yeah, so, but anyway, that's the story. That's, where it is right now. And so I'm just beginning to get the word out. I feel like at this time I've seen how this work has brought, completion to a lot of families, you know, the women who are maybe single moms, or maybe they're not single moms, but this, the income that they can bring from Valet of the Dolls helps them put food on the table, keeps the lights on, like quite literally, and, you know, makes the difference between the despair that they were in when they were looking for the job and what they feel now. And a lot of folks, they have a thing. They've got, you know, credit card bills or something that they need to pay off. They come, they work, they pay that off. And next thing I know, they're addicted to the job and they're still doing this. One lady.
What's the addiction? Is it the cars or the fun or what?
It's everything. It's the cars. It's the way that we're received. It's the company that you're keeping. It's the places that you're going. It's never the same place every day. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, like at a restaurant where you're doing the same place. It's never like that. And we're just so appreciated. I mean, people, it's not like folks are showing off having valet. The days where it was cool to walk in heels a block to a party, that ended in high school, maybe college. But after that, it was no longer cute or fun, you know? So we're needed, absolutely needed. And wow. So that's why. And it becomes like a family, so yeah.
Oh, all right. So if you're looking for a business, if you're looking to help women, if you want a business that's already existing, I mean, look at that community, helping women get out of debt, getting them addicted so to making money. Yeah. Power. Then where do they reach you? I know you're.
The website is valetofthedolls.com. And remember, valet is one L. So folks think it's like ballet, but no, one V-A-L-E-T of the dolls with an S.com. Or you can email me park@valetofthedolls.com. And so there you go.
Wow. All right. Yeah. So we have about, I don't know, 30 seconds. What is your vision? I know you do so many things, but in just a couple sentences, what would you hope the world looks like in 5 years from now?
Okay, in 5 years, Valet of the Dolls is still open and operating and thriving, and I'm not part of it. And I am thriving in my Stargate adventure, you know, orbiting the realm of spirituality and metaphysics on a day-to-day basis. That's what I see 5 years from now.
And what has stargazing done for the world?
It's not stargazing. It's Stargate Adventure. Stargate, oh, Stargate is the
portal. Sorry.
Okay. That's okay. It's kind of the portal through which.
So what, let's say that's up and successful. What is the difference that has made? That's what I was trying to say, in the world.
Stargate has been a portal for people. Thousands of people have been able to use the learning process to actually experience themselves as their authentic spiritual beings, so that they are limitless and being able to expand on that and live their lives fully.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Incredible. All right.
Let's make this happen, baby. Woo-hoo.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jillian. This has been so much fun. Let's do this thing. I love it.
Thank you.
All right. We'll see you next week, everyone. Bye.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony, and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.